Why did you? McAdams asked. Because I'm an idiot, Decker said. What time did you leave from the Boston area? After dark, but not too late. Maybe 9 or 10. He rubbed his neck and blew out air. I was tired, too. The road was dark, and it was hard to stay awake. I must have dozed off for a moment. Next thing I knew, I was headed for the railing. I swerved and braked very hard. I didn't hit the railing head-on. I hit it on the passenger side, front bumper, enough to break through the metal so that the airbags deployed. He shook his head again and pinched off a fraction of space between his thumb and forefinger. I was this close to going off the edge. The front wheels were almost dangling. Scary, Decker said. Yeah. Airbags deploy? Yep, but I hit my forehead on something. Could have been the airbag hitting me. In any case, I was wearing my seatbelt, so I was okay. A long sigh. Dana knocked her head on the side window. I guess since she wasn't wearing her seatbelt, the airbag knocked her sideways. The glass broke, not shattered, but it broke like in that concentric circle pattern. There was blood everywhere. A long pause. She never uttered a sound, not a groan, not a moan, nothing. I thought for sure she was dead. Did you check? I don't remember. I was in shock at that point, and she wasn't moving. Decker nodded. What did you do next? I eased myself out of the car. It was pitch black. I was scared and completely panicked. I didn't know what to do. The young man suddenly shut down. Softly, Decker said, "You called someone for help." I don't think I should say anything else. This is the deal part. The part when you called up a person to help you out. Like I said, I use burner phones. You might have used a burner phone, but you probably called a standard cell where we can access phone logs and texts. Decker sat back and spoke calmly. There are only so many people you would have called in that situation. How long do you think it's going to take us to figure it out? You can't randomly go around checking people's cell phone records. There is nothing random about our investigation, Cameron. We do everything properly, and we'll get our warrants. If you help us out now and save us work, you can go a long way toward making yourself look good. So who'd you call? If I give you information that may have to do with some other crime, what can you do for me? What will I recommend to the DA, you mean? Yes. Depends on the information. What, ideally, are you looking for in a plea bargain? Ideally? All charges dropped. That's not going to happen. I've got good information. Is it about Delilah Oakham? I had nothing to do with her death. Nothing. I believe you. You had nothing to do with her death. Tell me what you think happened to her. Have you heard rumors? Maybe yes, maybe no. Snow sat back in his seat. I'm not saying anything more. Even when I get my lawyer, I'm not talking to you. That's your right, son. So stand up. Let's start the process. Can I just wait here for my lawyer? No, Cameron, you cannot wait in an interview room. We have to book you now. Snow didn't move. How about no jail time? You're controlling this interview, you know. You're a force to be reckoned with. Decker watched pride sweep across the kid's face. Do you want to continue talking to me without a lawyer present? I need a yes or no answer to the question. Okay, yes, I'll talk to you without my lawyer for a few more minutes. I'll tell you everything I know if you can recommend no jail time. Tell me what you have, and I'll take it to the DA. I need assurances that you'll take that recommendation to the DA. I can't give you that, Decker said, but I can tell you what will happen if you don't tell us the name of the third party who was involved in helping you out. The attempted murder falls on you. If you name a third party and were able to prove it was him or her who pushed the car over the embankment, maybe a DA would plead down that charge to something lesser. To what? I don't know, Decker said. I'm not a lawyer. McAdams broke out in a coughing fit. You really need to go to the doctor with that cough. Sorry. McAdams took a swig of water. Snow, also taking a drink of water, said, I'm not going to prison. That's exactly where you're going, unless you have something to bargain with. Decker waited for Snow to finish his water. Then he refilled the cup. Snow said, I've got to take a wicked piss. There's a bathroom down in booking, Decker said. The kid made a face. McAdams said, Right now, right at this moment, this is your best chance to save your neck, Snow. Snow blew out air. I called a friend. Who? Decker said. Casey Halpern? Marcus Craven? One of your other buddies who alibied you on the night that Delilah Oakham died? We'll try them all, Cameron. It's going to take a while. And in the meantime, you're languishing in jail. I'll be out on bond. They have to grant me bail for a car accident. Not if you're a suspected murderer. For Dana Berenson as well as Delilah Oakham. I had nothing to do with Delilah's murder or Dana's attempted murder. But you might know something about both of them. Decker stood. Look, Snow, I can't keep questioning you if you have to go to the bathroom. Your lawyer will say I questioned you under duress. Let's go down to booking. The kid remained seated. I had nothing to do with Delilah Oakham's murder. Fine. Do you want to take a piss or do you want to talk? Give me a sec, okay? I'm thinking. Take your time. And if you want to help yourself, give me the name of the person you called the night of the accident. A few moments passed. Then Snow said, I called someone who gave me the number of someone who had helped him out in the past. Who did you first call for help? Snow's jaw was bulging. What the hell? No honor among thieves, right? Who'd you call, Cameron? Casey Halpern. Good, thank you. And who did you call after you called Casey Halpern? I didn't call anyone. Casey called someone for me. So who came down to help you out, Cameron? Dr. Palak. Michael Palak. Do you know another Dr. Palak? Clarification, Cameron. Yes, it was Michael Palak. 3 hours later, he rode up in some dinky car without plates. So this was about 2 in the morning? McAdams asked. About. Then what happened? He gave me the keys to his car and a map of how to get back to the colleges without going through toll booths. Okay, Decker said. That's great. Do you still have the map by any chance? It might be somewhere in my dorm room. I'd have to check. We'll check for you. Don't worry about it. It wasn't a very clear map. I got lost and had to use my GPS to make it home. Then if you used your GPS, you probably went through several toll booths. Snow made a face. Sometimes I'm not only a dick, I'm real stupid. A rare moment of insight. Decker said, Let's get back to what happened, Cameron. Michael Palak gave you the keys to the car he was driving. Yes. And he gave you a map to avoid going through toll booths. Yes. What did he say to you after he gave you the map and keys? He told me where to leave the car and said he'd pick it up later. Where did he tell you to leave the car? At Harvard and 4th. A block away from campus, then. Yes. Did he tell you anything else? He told me that he'd take care of everything. He told me to go back to the colleges and not to stop for anything. Then what happened? He told me to leave, and I did. He didn't have to tell me twice. I really have to piss. Let's go, McAdams said. Are you taking me to booking? McAdams looked at Decker, who said, Bring him back here. We're far from done. Chapter 38. As Decker regarded Snow through the one-way mirror, he said, "Could someone go in and ask him if he wants something to eat or drink?"
"I'll do it."
Kevin got up from the chair. Radar said, "Do you personally want to pick up Palak?" "Send Kevin and Karen to do it when the time comes," Decker said.
"You want to wait on it?"
"I'd like to have something other than Snow's word that Palak was there. First thing I want to do is search Snow's room and find the map that Palak allegedly gave him."
"It'll take a while to get the warrant," Radar said. "Might be easier to ask Snow for permission. He seems to be in a cooperative mood."
"Okay," Decker said. "The car that Snow described Palak as driving, it doesn't sound like his regular car."
"You think it was a rental?" McAdams said. "I'll call up the local companies."
"Before we do it, let's check the DMV and find out what car is registered in his name."
"I'll do that as well," McAdams said.
Radar said, "What do you want to do about Casey Halpern?" "We have to make sure that Snow is telling the truth about Halpern. He's been lying from day one."
"So pick up Halpern and ask him."
"He's not local anymore. He graduated, and I don't know where he lives. But I'm betting that Snow does. Halpern is probably out of our jurisdiction. We'll be depending on another police department. I don't know if they'll be willing to pick him up just based on what Snow says."
McAdams said, "If what Snow says is true, we can get Palak on attempted murder."
Decker said, "But we need something to tie Palak to Snow other than Snow's confession. If Palak avoided toll booths, he probably avoided populated areas and CCTV. It's unlikely we'll pick him up on the road. We need the map."
McAdams said, "Do you want me to ask him for permission to search his dorm room and for his burner phone to corroborate what he just told us?"
"I can do it," Decker said.
"I'm less threatening. Let me do it."
"Fine."
"I'll also ask him where Casey Halpern lives so you know which police department to contact."
"Great."
"Question," Radar said. "Do you think that Snow has already called Palak and Halpern and warned them that he's being questioned?"
"I thought about that," Decker said. "My opinion, he hasn't told them anything. I think as soon as we started talking about Dana and attempted murder, Snow knew he was in it up to his eyeballs. I think he decided that they were his get-out-of-jail-free card. So, no, I don't think he's called either of them, yet. If we had his cell phone and his burner, we could check."
McAdams said, "You want me to ask him for his cell to see who he's been calling?"
"It would show good faith on our part to ask him for it, but once he's booked, we'll get it anyway." Decker turned to Radar. "I don't know who else is involved in this mess, but I think we should keep watch on Carter and Diaz while we're interviewing Palak."
"When's your buddy coming in to watch Carter?"
"Oliver? Tomorrow."
"I can spare someone until then. What about Rena?"
"She's supposed to be with someone at all times. I'll check in on her. Thanks for asking." Radar said to McAdams,
"Go in and ask Snow for his cell and burner phones and permission to search his room. Let's see what he does."
Both of them watched as McAdams went into the interview room and sat down.
"Is Detective Butterfield bringing you food?"
"The guy who just came in?"
"Yes."
"Yeah, I think he's bringing me a hamburger." Snow sat back.
"You know, I've been very cooperative."
"Yes, you have."
"I hope you guys will be equally cooperative with me. I really laid it on the line, you know. I'm bare-assed in the wind right now."
"Cameron, we're thinking about what you told us, and we're leaning toward believing you."
"You should. It's the truth."
"Right. I do have a few requests that'll help your case out considerably."
"I told you everything I have to say."
"I realize that.
Now it's just about corroborating what you said. The kid was quiet. Then he said,
Go ahead. I'm listening.
McAdams said, You told us that Palak gave you a map that night. You also said that the map might be in your dorm room.
I don't know if I threw it away or not.
Can Detective Decker and I search your dorm room?
For the map?
For the map and for anything else that might corroborate your story. Cameron shrugged.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. A couple of other things. What about your burner phone? It would help our case if we had it and could corroborate the calls that you said you made. Cameron sighed.
Well, you're too late for that. I threw it away,
McAdams said.
Where did you throw it?
I chucked it when I was on the road headed back.
Okay.
Do you remember the phone's number?
No idea.
Where did you buy it?
I think I bought this one at Target.
At which Target did you buy the burner that you tossed on the side of the road?
In Hamilton, I think.
Do you remember when you bought it?
A month ago, maybe. It was almost used up when I decided to ditch it.
Okay, McAdams said. You bought the burner a month ago at Target in Hamilton. How did you pay for it?
In cash. It doesn't do you much good if your burner has a paper trail.
And this was the phone that you used to call Casey Halpern? When Cameron nodded, McAdams said, Can you say yes or no for the recording?
Yes, I called Casey Halpern on it.
Did you block your number when you called him?
No, I did not. I wanted it to register on his phone logs in case he tried to deny that I called him.
Why would he deny that you called him?
I'm not saying he would, but I did call him, and then Dr. Palak showed up. So you draw your own conclusions.
Okay, that makes sense. So your burner's phone number would be on Casey Halpern's phone logs. Trouble is, I can't get into Halpern's phone logs until I verify that your burner called him. And I can't verify that unless I know your burner's number.
I don't want you to pull up my burner because I don't want you knowing everyone I called on it.
Cameron, I'm not working vice. This is a homicide case, and it would really help your case if we had the burner's number.
I have to think about it.
Don't take too long to come up with an answer.
Anything else you want to squeeze out of me?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Do we have your permission to look at your cell phone?
No, it has my burner phone number in it. What are you looking for?
McAdams said. Just verifying your story. Kevin Butterfield came back with a fast food bag and a Coke. He set the bag in front of Snow.
Here you go.
No, you can't look at my phone. Cameron pulled out a hamburger.
Bon appetit.
He took a bite. McAdams said, Where does Casey Halpern live? Snow swallowed and wiped his mouth.
Last time I saw him, he was in New York.
Okay, McAdams said. Can you narrow that down?
Brooklyn.
Do you know where in Brooklyn?
Nope, and I don't even know if he still lives there.
Have you ever been to his place?
A few times, but I couldn't tell you a thing about it.
You've been there, but you don't know his address?
I had it at one time. He texted it to me. It was a long time ago. I probably deleted it. I don't remember.
Was it a posh area?
Cameron thought a moment. It had a lot of cafes, places where people hang out and check their phones and do nothing.
That could be a lot of areas.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't know Brooklyn.
Okay. I'll be back.
Yeah, I hope you remember that I've done nothing but cooperate with you.
McAdams was about to leave when Snow said,
It was near a lot of Jews, where Halpern lived. You know the Jews I'm talking about, the ones with the curls and the long black coats.
Did Halpern live in Williamsburg? The kid shrugged. don't know. You're the cop. You find him. Can I eat my hamburger in peace? Even a guy going to the gallows is entitled to his last meal.
Sure. I'm kidding about going to the gallows, Snow said. But if I did go, my meal would be a whole lot better than a fucking hamburger.
Cameron Snow's dorm room was a single, and that meant no meddling roommate to worry about. It wasn't dirty, but it wasn't tidy. Clothes scattered on the bed, a pile of papers on top of the desk, and a messy closet. The garbage had been emptied, and there were no stray food containers or wrappers. He had several boxes of cereal, several bags of chips, and cans of beans, corn, and soup. There was a small fridge with dips, instant coffee, a carton of milk, and beer. After searching through the desk drawers, McAdams despaired.
No map.
Check again. I did it twice, but I'll go for the trifecta if you insist. Decker was flipping through papers from the desktop. Let's switch. He handed McAdams the papers and went to check the drawers. 20 minutes later, he got up, his knees cracking. No luck. What about you?
Nothing.
McAdams placed the papers back on the desk. Check the closet, Decker said. It's been a little nippy at night. He was probably wearing a jacket. Maybe he folded the map and stuffed it in a pocket.
Sure.
When are you headed back? Decker asked as he lifted off Snow's crumpled bed covers.
What time is it?
McAdams checked his watch. It was almost 6.
I'll go back after I've had some dinner. Hint, hint.
I'll tell Rena you're coming over. Decker felt the covers, shook them out, and then laid them on the floor. He pulled out his phone. After a few rings, he said,
She's not picking up.
That's not good. He sent her a text.
I'm sure she's fine. Didn't you just speak to her?
A half hour ago. Decker's phone buzzed. Okay. She's answered that you're welcome anytime. You don't even have to ask. He texted back for her to call him. McAdams separated the coats from the rest of the clothes and began to check pockets. Decker's cell rang. He said,
Just wanted to hear your voice.
Rena said,
I'm still at Hillel with around 6 students who are helping me cook. I'm going to pack it in at around 7.
Perfect. I'll come pick you up.
You don't have to do that.
I'm at Morse McKinley. Do not step foot out the door until I get there.
What are you doing there?
All in due time. Make sure you're with someone at all times.
I'm fine, Peter.
Nuh-uh. Just listen to me, okay?
What's wrong?
I can't get into it now, but I'll fill you in later, okay?
Son of a bitch,
McAdams announced.
What? Decker said.
I didn't say anything, Rena said.
Can I call you back in a bit?
Don't bother. I'll see you in an hour.
Decker hung up. McAdams was holding a folded plastic sleeve that contained a piece of paper.
It's not a map. It's directions from Morse McKinley to somewhere up north, presumably the accident spot.
What kind of directions?
Very complicated directions,
McAdams smiled.
Back roads. Looks like he got them off a computer service. Why are you always right?
Tell that to my wife.
Evidence bag, please.
McAdams shook his head.
That was a stroke of luck.
It would have been better if the directions were handwritten.
Decker, gift horse, mouth.
I expect nothing except perfection.
Decker was grinning. You know what the best part of those directions is?
What?
It's hard to pull prints off paper. Decker handed McAdams a paper bag. It's much easier to pull them off plastic. Chapter 39. As soon as McAdams came to the station house, Radar said,
We've got eyes on Diaz and Palak. We can't seem to locate Carter.
Shit, what happened?
This is a walking town. He must have slipped away. And, yes, it is not good to lose visual with the creep. Where's Decker?
Picking up his wife at Hillel at Morse McKinley.
He told me to drop this off and get it dusted immediately for Prince.
What is it?
The directions that Palak allegedly gave to Cameron Snow. I was going to copy them down and see what route Palak took to the accident spot. See if there are CCTVs en route.
And the paper was like that when you found it, in the plastic sleeve?
Yes. Let's cross our fingers that we've got Palak's prints on the plastic. Do we have Palak's prints on file?
I'll check for you. School would have them. It's part of the local ordinance that all faculty from the colleges are printed.
Do you want me to get them?
They'll ask why, and I don't want to open up that can of worms without proper papers.
When we pull Palak in for questioning, just lie and say we got them from the colleges and we found a match.
Sure.
When are you going to pick up Palak?
Now, before he bolts. Call up Decker. Ask him when he's coming in.
Sure.
McAdams made the call.
He wants to know if he can eat dinner first. It'll take him about a half hour.
That'll be fine. It'll take at least that long to process Palak.
Where are you eating dinner?
Pete invited me over.
Go. Radar relieved him of the evidence bag with the sleeve.
I'll see you both back here in an hour or so. In the meantime, I'll see if Palak's prints are in the system for any criminal reason.
He doesn't have a record. Neither does Hank Carter.
Are you sure you don't want me to go over to the college and ask for them?
They won't give them to us, Tyler. They're very private with their own.
Have you had any luck calling up rental car agencies?
The local ones are closed. McAdams paused.
What about notaries, Captain?
What about them?
I don't think they have the duty of confidentiality like a lawyer or doctor or priest. And I know you give them a right thumbprint when you sign a notarized document.
It's only a right thumbprint, but most people are right-handed and most people use their thumbs.
I could check with local notaries to see if Palak has a print in their books.
Okay, good idea.
I'll make some calls at Decker's house.
Right, Radar said.
Go enjoy your dinner. It might be a while before you'll eat again.
Have you found Carter yet?
When Radar shook his head, Decker began to pace.
How could this happen?
We can't bring him in anyway, Pete. We don't have anything on him other than being creepy.
Where is Rena now?
She's with friends. She's okay, but I would feel so much better if I knew where that asshole was. He must be involved in something. Otherwise, why would he bolt?
I don't know that he did, Radar said.
Your PI friend is coming tomorrow. I hired him to watch Carter. So let him use his PI skills and find Carter if he's still AWOL.
Right now, we have more pressing matters. Palak needs to be interviewed before he asks for a lawyer, and we lose our chance with him.
I know.
Where's Snow?
Radar said.
He's in jail waiting for arraignment. I'm hoping bail is high enough to keep him overnight, but a judge may not consider him dangerous or a flight risk. If he's about to be cut loose, we'll parade him in front of Palak to make him nervous. Let's get going, Pete.
Right. Decker looked around.
Where's Tyler?
I sent him home to eat dinner with you.
When Decker didn't answer, Radar said.
He didn't show up?
I thought he just decided to stay here.
Damn it.
Decker dialed McAdams's number. The kid picked up.
Yo!
Where the hell are you?
Hello to you too, boss.
Don't be a wise ass. You had me worried.
Oh, you care, McAdams said.
Listen to this. I, through my doggedness and persistence, have managed to find a 24-hour rent-a-car agency in Hamilton called New East Transportation. After a bit of bullying and lying, they finally opened the records for me for the night of the accident, which was actually Sunday by the time James Delick rented a red Chevy Sonic at 1:17 a.m.
Okay, Decker exhaled. That's really good.
And we know definitely that Delek is Palak because...
You've got to be kidding me.
Did you show the rental agent a picture of Palak?
Please, I know better than to bias her before we have a six-pack or a lineup.
Besides, I don't even know if she was the one who rented to Palak, or Delek, if you want to play it by the book, whatever the book is. Have you brought Palak in yet?
I was just about to go into the interview room. I'll use the information you just gave me to put on the heat. Get your ass down here so you can be part of it.
I've got a few more things to do.
Like?
I'm trying to track down local notaries. Another one of my brainstorms. Ask Radar about it. It may take me a while.
Come in whenever you can, Harvard. We're in this for the long haul.
This time, Palak had drawn his thick hair back in a man bun. He was still slight and still short. Decker motioned the standing man to the chair, and both of them sat down. He put his notes on the table, poured two cups of water, and slid one in front of Palak, who said,
"What do you want?"
He didn't wait for an answer.
"I'm really a busy guy."
"I appreciate that, Dr. Palak. Thanks for coming down."
"Like I had a choice. Why am I here?"
"I'm asking for your help."
"What help? I can't help you."
"You don't even know what I'm asking for."
"It can't be good. You don't drag a person down to the police station just to get help. So either arrest me for something or I'm going home."
"You want me to arrest you?"
"Well, no, I don't want you to arrest me. I didn't do anything arrestable. I don't even know if that's a word."
"Dr. Palak, do you have any idea where your brother-in-law might be?"
"You mean Hank?"
"Yes, Hank Carter. Do you know where he is?"
"No, I don't. He's a grown man, and I don't keep tabs on him."
"Think about it, sir. You have no idea where he is."
"I answered your question already. Why? Is he missing?"
"We're looking for him just to chat, and we can't seem to find him anywhere. He doesn't appear to be home. He's not in his office. I thought that was odd."
"It is odd, but..."
Palak stood up, and then he sat back down.
"You didn't drag me down here to ask where my brother-in-law is, so if that's it..."
"I have a few more questions."
"Well, if you have a few questions, I might be willing to answer them."
"If you have more than a few questions, then I might have to get a lawyer."
"Up to you."
"So is it a few or is it more?"
"Let me start with a few, okay?"
"Fine." Palak threw his hand up in the air and let it drop back down.
"Ask your questions."
"Do you want a lawyer?"
"Am I under arrest?"
"Did I arrest you?"
Palak exhaled.
"Fine. Ask your few questions, and then I'll decide if I want a lawyer."
"Sure.
First, let me give you a little background."
"So this isn't about Bogat?"
"No." Palak seemed to visibly relax.
"Okay. Give me background."
"A week ago, I got a call about a missing Morse McKinley College student named Dana Berenson. I'm sure you heard about the incident."
"Yeah, of course."
"Eyes on the ground."
"A car crash, right?"
"Poor thing. I heard she's in critical condition, in a coma." When Decker nodded, Palak said,
"I heard she isn't going to survive."
"Who told you that?"
Palak looked down again.
"That's what I heard."
"Because the car went over the embankment."
"Exactly."
"And afterward it caught on fire."
"Is that true?"
"Yes."
"Poor, poor thing. How do you survive that?"
"Only by a miracle."
Decker paused.
"But miracles do happen, Dr. Palak. Dana has come out of her coma. She's groggy. She doesn't remember everything. But she does remember some things."
Palak was quiet. Then he said,
Well, that's wonderful.
He kneaded his hands. His eyes were everywhere except on Decker's face.
That's just great.
Silence.
Anything else? I'm really very busy.
I know. And I wouldn't drag you down here unless I thought you could help.
Help? How?
Well, Decker sat back and took a sip of water. As we're looking into this horrific accident, your name came up.
My name?
Yes, sir.
I don't understand.
Palak was biting his lip.
How did my name come up?
Well, Dana mentioned it in a hazy fog. Now, yours wasn't the only one, but she did say your name. I'm just wondering why.
Palak didn't say anything.
Decker said, like I said, she's still in a fog. So if you could just tell me where you were a week ago, very early Sunday morning, between 12:30 and 5 a.m., I can strike you off my persons of interest list.
That's easy. Palak's eyes twitched. At that time, I was undoubtedly home sleeping.
Is there anyone who can verify that?
My wife, of course. I was home the entire evening.
You're sure about that?
I mean, I might have gone out earlier in the evening, but I was definitely home later.
And you're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Okay, thanks.
Is that it?
A couple more questions.
You said a few questions.
So far, I only asked you two questions. Where your brother-in-law is, and where you were in the wee hours of Sunday morning, and you answered them for me.
Palak was quiet, Decker said.
So, if you were home that Sunday morning between 12:30 and 5 a.m., can you tell me something?
Depends on what.
Why did a rental car agent at New East Transportation near Hamilton identify you as the man who rented a Chevy Sonic at 1:17 a.m. under the name of James Delick?
Palak was momentarily stunned.
I am not James Delick. No, you're not. That's why I brought you in, to help me clear this up.
If James Delick rented a car, you should contact him.
But the agent identified you as James Delick.
Obviously, she made a mistake. So the agent was a woman. Good to know.
Decker thought about how to use it.
How'd you know it was a woman, Professor Palak?
Palak stuttered.
You told me it was a woman.
No, I didn't. I said an agent identified you as James Delick.
It's either a man or a woman, and most of those rental car places are staffed with women.
I don't like what you're implying. This isn't a fact-finding mission. This is a setup, so either arrest me or I'm leaving.
Do you want me to arrest you?
No, I don't want you to arrest me. I don't even know why I'm here.
That is what I'm telling you, Dr. Palak.
We're clearing up a few things. Like, if you weren't posing as James Delick, why is the handwriting on the car contract so similar to your own handwriting?
What do you know about my handwriting?
How hard do you think it would be to get a complete sample of your handwriting and match it to James Delick's handwriting on the contract?
So you don't have a complete copy of my handwriting?
I borrowed some tests from some of your students where you made comments. I have some samples.
Look, detective, I didn't rent any car, and I'm not James Delick. If you don't get to the point, I'm leaving.
Another question. Why would Casey Halpern call you the Saturday night of the accident?
Palak turned pale. He stammered out,
He didn't call me.
Your cell number is on his phone.
That's impossible.
Why's that?
Now I know you're lying to me. This is probably all lies.
Why would you say that?
Because I know my cell number is not on his phone,
Decker said.
I meant your burner phone number.
Casey gave the number to me, sir, so there's no sense denying it. If I call the number, will my cell ring in your house?
Palak was quiet.
I think I need to talk to a lawyer.
That is certainly your right. And it's my right to arrest you for the attempted murder of Dana Berenson.
You can't be serious.
I'm very serious.
That's what you have on me? Some agent's misidentification and a phone number from a burner phone that no doubt can't be traced to me?
I can't talk to you anymore. You asked for a lawyer. I'm going to arrest you now and read you your rights.
Wait, wait, wait!
Decker paused. If you want to keep talking to me, you have to say explicitly that you're willing to do so without legal representation. All this is being taped, and I don't want it messed up by procedural errors. Palak was nervous, guilty, and furious all at the same time. Finally, he said,
So what if Halpern called me? Is that a crime?
Are we still talking, or do you want a lawyer?
Just listen, okay?
I can't, because you asked for a lawyer.
Okay, forget the lawyer. What's the big deal if an old student calls me?
It's not a big deal. What did he call you about?
Oh, what he always calls me about, Palak exploded. Girl problems. He took a shine to me while he was here. I was his confidant, so he calls me whenever he has girl issues. That was it. I talked to him for a little bit.
So what? What time was that?
You should know. You're the one who claims I talked to him.
It was a little past 10 Saturday evening. How long did you talk to him?
You should know that, too.
Just answer the question, Professor. Palak cleared his throat and took a sip of water.
Maybe 20 minutes. Maybe a little longer.
A little late to call about girl problems.
Casey's a jerk. But like I said, he imprinted on me. He's always calling me. So I talked to him for around a half hour, and then I suppose I futzed around the house until I went to bed. I don't know anything about James Dalek. I certainly didn't rent a car at that hour. I must have a doppelganger.
A doppelganger with your handwriting?
It's not my handwriting, because I'm not James Dalek.
Same handwriting, similar names.
It's not me.
Do you have an identical twin?
Maybe, because James Dalek isn't me, so unless you have other proof...
There was a knock on the door. Both Decker and Palak looked up as McAdams walked in. He was stifling a smile.
May I talk to you for a moment, sir?
Decker got up and took his notes and folders. Make yourself comfortable, Dr. Palak. You're not going anywhere. He and McAdams went into another room and stared at a frantic man pacing behind a one-way mirror. What's up?
I found the agent who rented to Palak, McAdams said. She lives about 30 minutes from here, but she's willing to come in.
God bless her soul.
Do we do a lineup or a six-pack?
I can't round up 5 guys who look like Palak that soon. Go through the mug books and get a six-pack. Great job, Harvard. The case is going to rest on her ID.
Not quite,
McAdams broke into a wide smile.
Forensics got a few great prints off the plastic sleeve a half hour ago. We pulled in a fingerprint expert from Hamilton. She just arrived. First, she's going to see if any of the prints match to Cameron Snow.
Are there other prints besides Cameron's?
Forensics wrote that there are at least 2 types of prints, 2 types of right thumbprints.
When he got no response, McAdams said,
Didn't you talk to Radar?
About what?
Oh, man, you will truly appreciate my genius with this one. Palak's prints aren't in any of our files because he doesn't have a criminal record. His prints are on file with the colleges, but to get them, Radar said we'd need to file all sorts of paperwork. So I got creative.
Notaries take right thumbprints of their signatories, and they don't have the official duty of confidentiality like lawyers and doctors.
You got hold of Palak's right thumbprint.
Like I said, the expert is checking right now. I know you'll get Palak's prints when we arrest him, but I thought it would be good to bag him while you're still interviewing him.
A print and a witness ID. If it works out, we're gold. In the meantime, I'll use it. The guy is going to break. Would you like to come in and put the nail in the coffin with me?
I'd rather watch from behind the one-way mirror. It's great blood sport, and no one dies.
Chapter 40. Just as Decker came up from booking Palak, Radar said,
"We have Diaz behind bars."
Decker made a face. What happened?
He had packed a suitcase and was ready to go somewhere. He said vacation, but I'm sure he heard about Palak. I'll probably have to spring him in the morning, so think of something before we have to open the cage.
As long as he's in custody, let's see if Diaz has a scar on his back.
I thought Aaron told you that it wasn't Diaz who tried to bury her.
Well, it wasn't Palak either, Decker said. When both he and Cameron were booked, they changed into their jail oranges. We checked them for both, and neither one had any back scars or anything on their shoulders.
Maybe it didn't leave a scar.
If Aaron hit the guy as hard as she said she did, there'd be a scar. McAdams stated the obvious.
How about our phantom?
Decker said.
Yeah, how about him? That's fucking great.
We'll find Carter, Radar said. With Palak and Snow locked up for the night.
And Diaz,
McAdams said.
Now we can concentrate on finding Carter, Radar said.
What's Snow's bail?
$250,000. His parents should be able to get hold of the 25 grand by tomorrow,
Decker said. What about Casey Halpern?
Radar said.
He's been picked up by the NYPD on attempted murder, which of course won't stick, but it's enough to get him up here so you can question him. There's nothing more to do right now.
I can look for Carter.
You're better off going home, getting some rest, and taking care of Rena.
To McAdams, Radar said, you might as well go back to school.
I'm not leaving until something is resolved, he turned to Decker.
Ready?
Yeah, let's get out of here.
It was 10 by the time they sat down to dinner. Rena was quiet, and Decker commented on it. She said,
long day. Not only physical, but it's emotionally stressful to find someone to babysit me all the time. I feel like I'm imposing on everyone, and I hate being an imposition.
It'll be all over soon, Decker said.
Yeah, especially since
McAdams was kicked under the table. He looked at Decker and stopped talking.
Especially since what?
Rena said. Since all of us are pretty close to the end. Decker had yet to tell Rena about Oliver. He knew she'd resent the idea, and she would feel doubly bad about involving a friend. Decker just wasn't up to the arguing when he was clearly right.
So Palak doesn't have a scar on his back, Rena said.
No,
McAdams said,
and neither does Snow or Diaz.
So it's Carter?
He's looking guiltier since he went missing, Decker managed a smile. We're scouring the streets for him. We'll find him.
I'm sure you will. I'm not worried, Peter. You know that.
Of course, neither am I.
I have some cooking to do tomorrow in the house, Rena said. I'll get way more done without another person to entertain.
I would think another person would be an extra set of hands.
It is nice having help, but cooking time is my thinking time. A few hours in the morning alone would go a long way. I'll keep the doors locked and my gun out.
Decker knew that Oliver would be in town around 12.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
You're right. We'll talk about it in the morning.
She speared a green bean and managed a weak smile. There was nothing left to say. The meal was functional and quick. Sleep was even quicker. At 7 in the morning, as Decker was sipping coffee and eating toast, his cell rang. Radar said, "Casey Halpern is coming into the station house with his lawyer in about an hour." "What's going on?" Decker put down his coffee cup. "I thought we'd have to fight tooth and nail to get him here. Something big must be on his mind. I haven't had a chance to read any briefs or statements, so I don't know what his angle is going to be, but I'm sure it's some sort of plea bargain." "Who's our DA?" "Melinda Message will be here in a half hour. I suggest we all confer to see what our strategy is going to be." "I'll be right there with Tyler." Decker hung up and looked at McAdams. "Casey Halpern will be at the station house with his lawyer in an hour. I don't know the specifics." "Delilah Oakham?" "He was in school when she died. He alibied Snow. We can hope." McAdams put down his coffee cup. "I'm ready." Decker looked at Rena. "I'm going to have to leave you alone."
"I'm fine."
"Can you invite someone over for the next couple of hours?"
"No, I can't. I'll be perfectly fine by myself. As a matter of fact, I'll be better off by myself because I'll only be thinking about myself. I'll lock the doors, take out my gun, and I'll phone you every hour."
"Don't open the door for anyone or anything. You don't even answer the door. Be vigilant, and if you feel anything is off, call the police. I don't care how trivial it is. I'll go do a quick check of the windows."
"I can do that. You go solve some murders."
She was pushing him to the door.
"I love you, and thank you for trusting me.
This may not be my finest hour."
"Go!"
After the two men left, Rena checked the doors, the windows, and anything else that might be a way into the house, like crawl spaces and attics. When she was satisfied, she took out a 5-pound bag of sugar, a 2-pound bag of brown sugar, 2 pounds of Parva margarine, salt, baking powder, vanilla, Parva chocolate chips, and 10 pounds of all-purpose flour. When she finished, she'd have enough chocolate chip cookies to feed a small Caribbean island. She went back into the living room and peered out the windows for any signs of life. All was quiet, all was still. She went to her bedroom and took out a .22 from the gun safe. With care, she loaded the bullets and then took it back with her into the kitchen. She wasn't a gun fan. If she had her druthers, all guns, even recreational guns, would be destroyed. Go back to the bow and arrow if you wanted to hunt. But, being a cop's wife, she did know how to shoot. There was a time for idealism, and there was a time for practicality. Chapter 41. During interviews, Decker liked to keep it cordial. Nothing personal, but he had a job to do. Even so, interviews often became adversarial. Once in a blue moon, there was that sweet spot where the suspect was clearly burdened by a past event. Such was the case with Casey Halpern. Like Snow, he was a good-looking and athletically built young man. He had auburn hair and dark, troubled eyes that looked at Decker without flinching. He sat with his lawyer, a young man in his 20s named Nathan Borstein, on one side of the table, while Decker, McAdams, and Melinda Message, a handsome woman in her 50s, sat opposite them. When all the procedure was done with, the plea bargain haggling started in earnest. Halpern raised his hand, and the lawyers stopped talking. "I need you guys to work something out, because I can't go on like this." Decker spoke before anyone else could.
Ideally, what do you want to happen, Casey?
Halperin thought a moment.
Ideally, no charges, because I didn't do anything. I certainly didn't have anything to do with Dana Berry, or whatever her name is. I don't even know her.
That's ideally, Decker said. What are you willing to live with?
I don't know, because I don't know what you guys have in mind.
His lawyer spoke to message.
What do you have in mind?
Give us something to work with, Melinda said.
Decker interrupted. Casey, what can you live with?
I don't want any jail time, that's for sure. I didn't do anything.
You helped Cameron Snow.
I took his phone call, and then I called Palak. I thought Palak was going to pick him up and take him back to the colleges. That's it.
I can believe that, Decker said. It's not Dana Berenson that's troubling you. It's something else. When Halperin didn't answer, Decker said, Cameron Snow doesn't have a moral barometer, but you do. I could tell the moment you walked through that door. Melinda Message said, Casey, if it's a case that I think warrants no jail time, maybe probation and community service, I can make the recommendations to the judge. But I can't do anything until we hear what you have to say.
That's the problem, Borstein said. Once you hear what Mr. Halperin has to say, we no longer have any bargaining chips.
Like Casey said, this isn't about Dana Berenson, McAdams said.
Decker said, if he says he took a phone call from Snow and then called Palak to help Snow out, pick him up in the car, I'm willing to believe that. He turned to Melinda Message. How about we deal with Dana Berenson's attempted murder if he gives us something in return?
As in drop the charges? Halperin said.
I'll go with that.
Nothing will be dropped until you tell us what you know, Melinda said.
Halperin whispered to his lawyer, who nodded.
It's about Delilah Oakham.
Okay, Decker said. You want to tell me about it?
I've been thinking about it since you guys picked me up. It's a sign.
And then he began his recitation.
I was there, at the party, when Cameron and Delilah got into a fight. They were both drunk, and when Cameron gets loaded, he can be loud and abrasive. Delilah, who was no angel, I'm just saying, was also hammered. They started with words, but then the fight became a little physical. She was poking him in the chest. He flung his arm to push her away and wound up hitting her in the chest. She stalked off. It should have ended there, but he was still angry.
Cameron was still angry at Delilah, Decker said.
That's what I'm saying. He stuck around at the party for maybe another minute or two, but then he ran after her.
So he left the party, McAdams said.
Yeah, but not for too long. He came back around 20 minutes later.
So he wasn't with you and your friends the entire time?
No, we were covering for him. He closed his eyes.
It was a dumb thing to do, but once you hear the whole story, maybe you'll understand why I did it.
Decker said.
Good that you're telling the truth. Please go on.
Yeah, where was I?
Cameron left to go after Delilah.
Yeah. He was gone for about 20 minutes. Then when he came back, I asked him where he'd been. He told me he went after Delilah. He said that she was really agitated and he was trying to calm her down. Then suddenly she said she didn't feel well. He said she threw up and passed out, which I can totally believe. There were more than a few times that I found Delilah passed out on the floor of a party or in someone's bed.
What did you do when you found her passed out? Melinda asked.
Nothing. She'd eventually wake up and go.
He turned to McAdams.
Don't say that never happened to you, right?
McAdams said.
No one is interested in me, Casey.
Decker said. Let's get back to the party. What did Snow say he did after Delilah passed out?
Halperin sighed.
Nothing.
Snow said he just left her there to sleep it off.
Left her where?
Outside, not too far from her dorm, behind some bushes. He said he watched her for a moment, then she rolled over and started snoring. He went back to the party, and then sometime in the evening, he hooked up with Eloise Braggin. I saw them leave together, so that part is probably true.
Okay, Decker said. Tell me what you did.
We left the party together, the guys, some girls, and me, and went back to my dorm, and we continued to party there for another 2-3 hours. You know, drinking and fooling around. People started to pair off, Snow with Eloise, for instance, and everyone was gone by about 3 in the morning. I didn't pair off with anyone. I waited until they left, and then I went to bed.
Where was Marcus Craven? McAdams asked.
Marcus had hooked up with Jenny Malley. I guess they went to her dorm, and he spent the night there.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, about an hour after I had gone to sleep, Snow comes crashing into my space and shakes me awake. He was freaked, totally panicked.
This is about 4 in the morning, Decker asked.
About, maybe a little later.
So he wasn't with Eloise Braggin the entire night.
He sure wasn't with her when he woke me up. I was real groggy, trying to sleep off my own hangover.
Snow was pale. He was sweating beer and fear. It took me a few minutes to understand what he was saying.
Halpern paused. Everyone waited.
Apparently, he went back to check on Delilah, make sure she was okay or had left to go to her dorm. I forgot what he said exactly.
He looked down.
What I do remember real clear is that he said she was at the same spot where he had left her and she wouldn't wake up. He kept shaking her. Finally, he realized she was dead.
Decker said, "That must have woken you up real quick."
Scared the shit out of me. I, being a jerk, said, "Are you sure?"
He said he thought so because she wasn't moving or anything, and he couldn't feel a pulse.
I told him to call an ambulance and the cops. He said that he couldn't do that without looking guilty and that we had to think of something.
Cameron said that he couldn't call the cops without looking guilty.
Yes.
I said he needed to call the cops. I didn't want any part of being his alibi or anything. But then he begged me to go look at Delilah to make sure she was dead. I said I wasn't going to have any part of that, but he looked so pathetic. I finally told him I'd go back with him, but eventually we'd have to call the cops. He said okay.
He dragged you into it, McAdams said.
Totally. I suppose I felt responsible a little because I didn't go back and help Delilah initially. And even though she wasn't my problem, I should have made sure she was sleeping it off somewhere safe. But then again, if someone had seen me carrying her, then they'd think I did something. I was screwed no matter what.
So, he sighed. We went back to see if Delilah was dead or not. Halfway through, and I don't know if this was real or fake, Snow's knees buckled. He began to barf. I felt sorry for him, idiot that I am. I told him to go back to the dorm and I'd check her out. I guess a part of me thought that Snow was bullshitting and that Delilah was okay.
He stopped talking. He looked far away and haunted.
Her eyes were open. I couldn't tell if she'd been raped or not, but she had no pants on. I was about to get the hell out of there, but then out of nowhere, Dr. Palak shows up. He's staring at the body and staring at me. He looks at me and says, "You killed her." And then I say, "Man, I just got here." And then I tell him about Cameron Snow, that he woke me up in a panic, that he was the one who had left her in the bushes after she passed out. I told him I